It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later in the program, we'll talk with comedian and PC guy John Hodgman. He's coming to Madison this weekend for a comedy show at the Barrymore.
But first, well, it's day three of the government shutdown, and American media organizations are all over the story. But our next guest says that coverage is missing the mark. Joining us now to talk about that is Dan Frumkin. He is the executive editor of fearlessmedia.org. And we've got a link to his piece, Shutdown Coverage Fails Americans, on the Central Time Facebook page. So check it out there. Dan, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. And from Eastern Time, I say hello.
We say hello back. So let's talk a bit. You start your piece out with just going through some coverage of the way American news organizations have been framing this story. For our listeners who may not have read that, how have American news organizations been framing this story so far?
Well, a lot of the news coverage is very process-oriented and says no agreements, you know, gridlocks, both sides digging in their heels, back and forth, legislative back and forth, all of which is technically accurate. And they do have to cover the latest back and forth. But what's missing from these stories, and especially from the headlines, is the fact that this is a manufactured crisis from the very beginning, that this is the result of aberrational behavior by one party, in this case the Republican Party. It's an unprecedented attempt to hold the government hostage in return for legislative, you know, givebacks. There is no equivalency here in the bigger picture. So by writing about sort of the back and forth and saying Congress is failing to do this, I think people are being given a very false sense of what is actually causally responsible for this crisis.
And so if that is missing, why is that coverage missing?
Well, it's hard. It's hard for journalists to take sides, because that's ultimately sort of what you'd have to do here, right? You'd have to say, basically, the Democrats are saying this, the Republicans are saying that, and in this case, the Democrats are actually pretty much correct. That's a hard thing to do. So there are other ways to do it. You know, it's funny. You can just sort of describe how it happened instead of doing the he said, she said reporting. For decades now, media critics have been pointing out that political journalists in particular succumb to this sort of false equivalence myth, this the sense that the only way you can be impartial and objective is by splitting the difference between the two sides. And we are in an unusual period right now where I think objectively, I think if you look at the course of history, the Republican Party is taking some very extreme and radical action. And if reporters try to sort of continue to follow the middle path between the two parties, they're being led into an extreme direction, and that direction is not actually adequately informing the public about what's going on.
And, you know, part of that, though, if you are involved in journalism and all that, that whole idea of balance, that whole idea of trying to be neutral and objective and all of that is something that's sort of written into your DNA, or at least, you know, they talk about it a lot in journalism school, and they try to practice it a lot when you're writing or working in a broadcast situation or whatever it might be.
How, and it's part of the oxygen in the newsroom, too,
yeah.
And your editor is expected of you, and if you don't do it, you know, it seems strange.
So what I'm getting at then is, given all of that, it's part of the oxygen, you're breathing it every single day, how do you get past that? How do you move on to something more what you're looking for, where you say that we need to, it sounds like, take sides to a certain extent?
Well, it's a question of being fearless, which is why I'm calling my new website fearlessmedia.org. The idea is you have to not be afraid of being criticized, and you have to remember what you're actually a journalist for, why you became a journalist in the first place, which is not to sort of triangulate your way through the day, but to hold the powerful accountable, to give the public the information it needs to be an informed electorate, to give it the information it needs to hold the powerful accountable. What's happening now is, by following this sort of chimera of objectivity, we're actually not holding people accountable for their actions. And it's become sort of a vicious cycle where if people, if politicians of either party say anything, say crazy things, and it works for them, and they don't get called out, they don't get exposed as being extremist, then they do it more and more. You know, so I think journalists just need to say, look, this is, you know, we have two rules here. One is we try to be fair, and the other is we try to actually tell the public what it needs to know. In this case, they're coming into conflict a little bit.
So do you have some examples of media that, in your estimation, are getting it right, that are covering the story in the right way, a place that we could look and get an example of what you're talking about?
Well, you know, in the article, the column that I wrote that ran on Al Jazeera, I cited the Guardian, which just basically said at the very top of the story, here's what they, how they put it. They said Republicans staged a series of last-ditch efforts to use a once routine budget procedure to force Democrats to abandon their efforts to extend U.S. health insurance. You don't need to be hyperbolic. You just need to say this is, but you know, this came about because Republicans took a procedure that is not in and of itself that controversial and turned it into a crisis.
And so, and as you read that, it doesn't really sound, you know, like a journalist taking sides.
No, no, it isn't actually a journalist taking sides. It's I'll leave it for the opinion writers and the partisans to say, blame the Republicans or blame the Democrats or that sort of stuff. But what's important is just to explain how we got here so that people can understand what happened. And what's astonishing is reading through these long stories written by, you know, the Washington Post, the New York Times, AP, Reuters, telling you all the back and forth that happened yesterday, all of which is basically, as one of my favorite bloggers calls it, covering the freak show. And it's not telling you what you need to know, which is how we got here, which is that this is a manufactured crisis. It's all covering, oh, my God, crisis, 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 and forgetting the fact that this is a manufactured one.
And I want to talk a little bit kind of about the state of journalism from a business perspective lately, because I wonder how that impacts in all this. You know, we've heard about the demise of newspapers. We see what's happening to network television news. We see all sorts of changes going on within journalism, and a lot of it related to the business side of things. Has that had an impact?
I think it has. I think in a lot of cases it's made people even more afraid to say anything that would subject you to criticism or lose readership or what have you. And I think that's actually the absolute wrong approach to take. I think it should make you less afraid and should make you realize that people aren't that interested in reading stenography and voiceless, unintelligible stuff. I think the value that journalists actually provide is to put stuff in context, is to explain it, is to help people understand who's telling the truth and who's not, rather than just sort of, you know, quoting them. So on the one hand, the danger is that people will be afraid to do the kind of journalism that they should. The good news, though, is I think actually the business model is stronger for journalism that has a traditional voice, speaking on behalf of its community, advocating for, you know, for the public, for the little guy, and speaking truth to power.
One more question. We're going to be taking a break in a second and getting to some phone calls.
Great.
One of the other things that has changed as I've been watching this over the years is that whole idea of sort of PR spin and sort of the proliferation of journalism-like press releases and journalism-like releases that wind up all over the place, that PR aspect, that selling stories to the media seems to have really changed as well.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it also encourages people to sort of create their own reality, because especially if they're writing their own news stories, they can say whatever they want.
But the journalists take them and run them.
That's a shame. They shouldn't do that.
We're going to take a break right now. We're talking with Dan Frumkin about media coverage of the government shutdown as it's working its way into its third day. And we'd like to hear from you, too. Do you think the media is failing the American public when it comes to covering the shutdown, or failing the American public in general? Would you like to see journalists hold politicians more accountable for their actions? We'll take your calls at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@WPR.org. And we'll be taking those calls right after this break. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. We're continuing our conversation with Dan Frumkin from fearlessmedia.org about media coverage of the federal government shutdown. And you can join us, too. Would you like to see journalists hold politicians more accountable for their actions? Give us a call if you'd like to join in at 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Dan Frumkin, before we get to calls, one question I have for you is, where's the public in all this? Wouldn't you think they would be demanding something more of journalism?
That's a great question. When you hear the voices of the public, they're saying, you know, fix Congress, fix Washington. I think that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy here that we've sort of dumbed down the press coverage so much that people don't even ask for what they need. That said, this article I wrote, for instance, really touched the nerve. It's gotten like 120,000 Facebook likes, you know, since I ran the other morning. There is a hunger for this. There's just not a, I don't think there's a voice for advocacy for this kind of journalism, which is why I'm starting up my new nonprofit to do just that. So I do think there's a hunger in the public. I think that what you hear back from the public right now is sort of a generic dislike of a lot of things because we're not differentiating enough.
We have a posting on Facebook. It's sort of long. It's from Jerry, and I think he might share that hunger with you. He says, most popular media seems unable to get beyond their mental model that all problems have just two sides. Media provides little information to provide context to today's events. The people responsible for the shutdown are the people who ran for Congress with a conviction that government isn't necessary. He winds up asking, why does it take Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert to call out the talking points for what they are? What do you think about that?
Boy, you know, I'll tell you, Stewart and Colbert have just walked, you know, really filled a vacuum that I think was created precisely by the kind of journalism that I'm complaining about. They don't worry about being, you know, about both sides. They just call, you know, baloney. And this calling of baloney, I think, is absolutely what people look to journalists for. They're not finding it there, so they're getting it from the comedians.
So does that make them a journalist?
You know, the who is a journalist thing, that's a tough one. I think in this day and age, you can't answer that question anymore. Who's doing journalism? I think they're doing a tremendous service in terms of informing the public. Absolutely.
Let's go to the phones right now and find out what listeners have to say. We've got a call from Charlie, who joins us in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. A very interesting topic, and I find it very interesting because I try very hard to see both sides and to obtain news from both sides, both in the newsprint as well as on TV. The one thing I would say is that I do think that all journalism is selectively choosing what topics to cover. Example, in George Bush's term, Valerie Plame and the Scooter Libby scandal. That needed to be covered. Some people covered it tough and some did not, but that needed to be covered. Conversely, if you look now, the Lois Lerner and the IRS, that is not being covered except by Fox News. Yet that is a story that I do believe needs to be covered. And when we talk about the shutdown, again, we are not getting at the main thing, which is that Obamacare is a new entitlement that will cost money. And in a country that has an increasing debt where we're spending more than we take in, this will add to the deficit. And it needs to be handled somehow, either through discretionary cuts or increased taxes. And nobody is saying that except Fox News again. So,
Charlie, thanks so much for those calls and those thinking. Dan Frumkin, when you hear callers like Charlie who says that there is coverage of some of these stories and has some very definite opinions about these, you know, how do you convince a listener like Charlie that there's more to the news than what he is reading?
Well, I mean, first of all, Charlie is absolutely right that all news is selective. I mean, there is no such thing as true objectivity. You make a ton of decisions about what's an important story, what's not, how to write it, how not to. The question is, are you making the decision because you're sort of intelligently assessing what the facts are, or because you're chasing after some you know, sort of sense of triangulation between what one person is saying and what another person is saying? Because I think that a lot of journalists are very smart people, and they should use their brains rather than sort of chase after some mean between two statements. I think that that if you get a lot of intelligent, non-ideological people in a room together in Washington, they'll agree on a lot of stuff on the facts. Once you have the facts established, you can have a really wonderful argument. I think Obamacare is a perfect example of an issue with a lot of really significant, interesting possible philosophical disagreements. I would say, however, that this is not the time to be arguing them because you need to keep the government open. But the other problem is making sure that people do have those shared facts. And that's where, you know, Charlie's mentioning of Fox News worries me, because I think Fox News operates in a largely not fact-free, but sort of making, you know, fact-free zone. They make up their own facts a lot of the time. You know, Obamacare, for instance, you know, by some measures is going to reduce costs. That said, I think that Charlie is exactly right. We should have reasonable discussions on how do you pay for government.
David is with us now from Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, David.
Yes, another thing I don't like is six corporations owning 90% of the media in the world. I mean, it's just, if I had my way, I would break these down to size. And as far as election campaign, not until you fix the media. NPR is one of the bright spots in the whole media thing, but you still, I mean, it's just like, I agree with your guest 100%. You quit being this as all treating whatever the Republicans say and the Democrats say is equal. I mean, or what the climate scientists and climate skeptics. No, there are opinions and there are facts, and the facts have to take precedence.
That's a good place to leave it there. What about that, Dan? What about corporate ownership of media?
Well, I think there's no coincidence that media consolidation and sort of a flattened voice have gone hand in hand. I think if you go into newsrooms today, they feel more sort of corporate and buttoned down than they did even just, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. So I think it's not a coincidence. I think that I don't think it's anything like that. You know, the corporate hegemons are telling the reporters how to write, but I do think there is such a thing as corporate culture, and I think it does leach through, and it does sort of create an environment in the newsroom where people are afraid to go out on a limb.
Well, let me ask you this then: given all of that, given what we've talked about, where are these brave journalists of the future going to come from?
You know, I actually think they're there already. I think, you know, I've spent much of the last 10 years writing sort of an iconoclastic stories in one medium or another about Washington press coverage, but I also know the people who write this stuff, and they're smart and they're skeptical, and I think they're captives of a culture and of an editorial process that is forcing them to sort of check their brains at the door sometimes. So I I'm very optimistic. I feel like things are so bad in the news business that we're at a potential inflection point where we say, you know what, maybe we're doing something wrong here. Maybe we need to change course. And, you know, for me, that moment would have come a couple of years after the war in Iraq, when that poll came out showing 70% of Americans thought Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11. If you're an American newsroom executive at that point, you ought to sit there and go, okay, we're doing something wrong. We have failed. And there's unfortunately a lot of cases since then to show that we're not succeeding at informing the electorate. We're not succeeding with our business models. Maybe we need to change. Maybe we need to put in a little, change our oxygen suppliers.
And if we don't change?
If we don't change it, I think we'll become more and more marginalized, and I think the country will be the worse off for it. I think you know, the good news is there are a lot of new independent voices of journalism, but some of this stuff takes a lot of money. So I mean, it's great there's a lot of philanthropy money behind investigative reporting and so on. But no, I think it's scary. I think newsrooms and newspapers are a terrific institution to do this, to carry these traditions forward. And I'm worried that they will either dumb themselves down or go out of business.
Well, Dan, thanks so much for joining us today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Dan Frumkin is executive editor of fearlessmedia.org, and we've got a link to that piece we've been talking about, Shutdown Coverage Fails Americans, on the Central Time Facebook page.
Coming up next, a conversation with comedian, author, and Daily Show resident expert John Hodgman. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.